everybody. This is Joanne French and your host of Women Interviews, where we talk to women business owners, discuss their trials, their tribulations, days of pure joy and pure terror as they forge a path to a successful business. I hope you learn a lot from these ladies. I know I have. So sit back, relax, enjoy the show. And just one shout out to our sponsor, interviews.com. Thanks so much. Okay. Welcome to the podcast, Renee. Thanks for joining me. I certainly appreciate your time and participation in this newly launched podcast. But I wanted to invite Renee to come speak with us because she's been a woman in business for over 9 years now and probably her whole entire life, which we'll get into. And specifically, we want to talk about her business. It's called Find Your Zen Yoga and Find Your Zen Home. And she'll get a little bit into that. And we'll also talk about sleep and the importance of sleep and how yoga can help that. And she'll explain more because I've just learned how to pronounce Nidra Yoga. And she's learned a lot about it and teaches that within her practice. So with that, Renee, if you could just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into Find Your Zen and yoga and what it does for you, that would be great.
Sure. Well, I've been into fitness kind of my whole life. I was always kind of a gym rat, but I always thought that the people doing yoga were just laying around doing nothing. So I really didn't check it out. I did it in the early 70s, but most recently I got hooked probably about 8 years ago. And it, to me, was a way to calm down, to really focus. There's so much that it actually does for you internally that we're not aware of. It changes actual genomes, blood cells, blood pressure, heart rate. But that being said, I got hooked on it because when I got done, I felt like I'd just been to the shrink. I felt like I'd been a little hypnotized. It was almost like a physical therapy session combined with a massage. So I felt like a Gumby person, but very chilled out. And I used to meditate in my early 20s, Zen meditation. And this type of yoga really, yoga can be a lot of things. It can be vigorous, but it can also be slow and mindful. So that's what really attracted me to it is I was getting, my body was changing, my posture was improving, but yet I wasn't pounding my spine. Because I am going to be 65 soon, and we really have to pay attention, I think, to the spine. We're only as old as our spine, and that health and that I ski a lot, so that pounds it down. So this was a way to undo all the stresses of life.
And really, gravity just keeps weighing us down as well.
Gravity, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... You know, it's a mindful kind of practice. Yoga means to unite the body, mind, and spirit. And I went to a school called Kripalu, which is up in the Berkshires. It's a beautiful place to go. If anyone can go for a retreat, they have numerous schools and really got hooked. Did a yin yoga training, a 200-hour yoga training. I most recently did a vinyasa flow training. But then I was also certified to teach yoga nidra, which is really great. And in my journey of teaching yoga, I decided to learn how to be a sleep consultant as well. So I've been wearing a lot of hats. I'm interested in a lot of things.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. Renee does a lot. She has a lot of energy and she does, besides fitness and health, she's a home consultant, interior designer, and a lot of other artists, a lot of other great things. So how did you make that leap? So you decided that you found yoga beneficial to you, particularly the therapy part of how you felt, like that Gumby person. Right. And how did you make the leap to teaching it?
Well, I asked my teacher, where would you go if you needed to go to school? Because I didn't know that at the time I wanted to teach it. I just knew I wanted to learn more about it and get better at it for my own good. But it just sort of crept up to me that, you know, I've got plenty of time. I was doing interior design a little bit, some home and organizing a little bit, wearing a lot of hats. And I thought, well, I can just add this to the mix. So I decided to start teaching. I needed it personally because in my life, my husband at the time kind of forgot he was married. So that sort of, you know, the band isn't getting back together there. And knowing that I really had only myself to rely on, right. I can trust, I thought, well, this would be a way to bring in some income. Plus, if you all know about commitment and dedication, when you teach, you have to be there. So it made me accountable for my own practice. A really big benefit, right? You can't not go if you're the teacher.
That's true. So what about that accountable part? How did you benefit from that part of it?
I'd say, well, I did probably 10 hours of yoga a week. So teaching. Wow. So it was more, you know, can my body keep up with this? And the 200 hour is rigorous. And I found that wherever you start in your practice, probably of any fitness program, but I can speak to yoga for sure, your body at first is a little awkward and you really just have to love yourself and be, you know, give yourself unconditional love and allow yourself to just be, you know, be in the moment, be in the present moment and be accepting of yourself, not critical, because your body, it takes time, but over time, it just, you won't even notice it, but a person just changes. And all of a sudden the pose that you did maybe a year ago doesn't even look like the same pose. And you just gain confidence with repetition and commitment, of course. When I always say when there's a decision made, just make a decision. Book yourself, with a trainer, with a class. Pay up front, you know, so that you have that investment. And after spending like $2,500 on yoga school, you really get motivated to, I'm going to make this work too. So it's a little bit, it's a lot mindset, but it's also, you know, other aspects of your life, like cutting out the time for it and creating the money for it. So you do show up and being extraordinary and not being afraid of what might happen. You just don't know. Like yoga and meditation helped me eliminate that limiting mind that says, oh, we have this mind, the prefrontal cortex that jumps in and says, oh, that'll never happen. You live in a tiny town. Oh, you can't do this yourself. How many jobs are you going to have? 10? Well, guess what? I've done at about 6, and it's, you can juggle it. You really, the body and the mind rise to the occasion, both in the poses and both in like challenges of their day-to-day life. I think once you have that positive mindset, it just changes all of your cells of your body. That's just my personal opinion. It's really
yoga helps with the, you know, I think we all experience negative self-talk.
Definitely.
How does yoga help with that?
Well, for that hour that you're on the mat, or maybe 2 hours if you have a nice long class, the breathing. First of all, the deep breathing puts your body into parasympathetic mode. So that means that you're in the feed and breed type of life. You're not in the fight or flight. You want to eat, you want to breed. We can't be relaxed if we're not in parasympathetic dominance. So that alone creates this calm mindset. And then when you're quiet for an hour and you're going inside and noticing your thoughts and not being judgmental. I mean, yoga is about being loving yourself and self-observation, really. So you observe your thoughts, and that allows you to say, well, is that really true? You know, was that really all that awful? Does that person think this and such? Probably not. The mind makes up so much restrictive stuff. And we do need that mind. A lot of yogis call it the monkey mind. Well, we need it. We don't want to be in the, you know, brain damage section of institutions. We need that thinking mind, but we don't want it to be the driver. You know, put it in the back seat and go, okay, thank you. You know, I am going to wear my hat. I don't want to freeze to death. Thanks for thinking of that. But sometimes it gets too busy and active. And so that's another reason I need a lot of businesses, so that, you know, busy hands, busy mind are happy minds. You know, you let you sit around and ruminate too much, and you can convince yourself of almost anything. Negative, certainly.
True. That's so true. I've just listened to a book. It's called And this is what the book's called. It's called Unfuck Yourself.
Oh, I love that. I saw that in an airport. I wanted to get it. I love that title.
It talks a lot to that. It doesn't call it the monkey mind. I like that.
It's our primitive brain that's trying to keep us from starving. You know what I mean? But we need it, but it really can be overly, it can be just detrimental. Let's put it that way. And just because you do yoga doesn't mean like 20 other times that day, I don't have those negative thoughts, but right. I just breathe deep and go, you know, come on, is that really real? So.
Oh, that's interesting. I know, you know, it's hard to think about how yoga can retrain your brain. Do you think that's true? Can it retrain your brain?
Absolutely. There are studies. I have a huge PowerPoint with yogis that have meditated. Now, yoga, there are 8 branches of yoga. So the poses that everybody thinks of here in the US are just 1/8 of the practice. Mm. There are observances like non-harming, truthfulness, surrender, all these wonderful things that probably most people would agree with. Some would say, you know, they're kind of universal, but the meditation part of it, where you're allowed to go inside while you're either moving through the poses or sitting still meditating, creates a thicker prefrontal cortex. They've measured it. Mm-hmm. It also lowers your blood pressure. It can lower the cholesterol levels. It definitely strengthens immune systems, digestion. It defends against infectious diseases. And there are so many, they've done blood tests. For instance, there was a Harvard study where people just meditated for 20 minutes a day for 8 weeks. And then they took their blood and they actually turned on clusters of good genes. So while turning off the clusters of the bad genes, there is something really to this stuff. You know, call it yoga, call it meditation, call it whatever you will. You just sit quietly. You focus on your breath. You can choose a mantra, like a word, select a word or a phrase that you repeat and focus on. Like, I am open to you, or I open myself to you, meaning to the universe, to the possibilities of life, because that monkey mind is kind of shutting it down like a little tight, in my mind, like a little tight ball, you know, and you want to just open it up. Like Wayne Dyer says, you'll believe it when you'll see it when you believe it. So if you believe things, it sounds a little woo-woo, but I really believe that that meditation allows you to calm down and to connect with that divine center that we all have, because we are all one. We are energetically the same. We are like a battery. We've got electrical impulses running through us. We have millions of channels called nadis that are energy centers and a lot of intelligence in every one of our cells of the body. But we have been trained to shut them down. And a lot of us think that our body's just walking around carrying a head, you know, but we are unified. We are 3D. We need to move. We need to engage all of that. And any mind-body practice, like Tai Chi, any of those things, start reminding us that, oh, that's right. You know, like they say, a goldfish has a 1-minute memory span. So if you picture us humans, we're in this big tank of life. We're floating around and we are spinning around, and each we go, oh, there's a castle. And we spin around and we come back, and a minute later, oh, there's a castle. So we constantly somehow have to keep rediscovering how great we really are and the potential that we have. So all of those practices, in my opinion, really bring us back to that baby-like quality of, oh my gosh, we are here, we are alive. This is a precious, precious thing. And as opposed to just getting, the more and more negative you get, you either get up and grow larger or you shrivel up and die. You know, the more negative you get, then, you know, you can see what happens to people if they get too lonely, you know, they just start getting too negative. So the community of the yoga or fitness or whatever you choose to do for your passion, you know, if it's painting, if it's hiking, whatever it is, that's going to create health in your cells, because we really store our issues in our tissues, and our anxiety controls everything. I'm convinced. I was at the doctor a couple months ago. I suffer from high blood pressure, even though I do all this stuff. It's inherited. And the nurse took my high blood pressure when I first got in, and she was asking me a lot of questions and or took my pressure. It was pretty high. And then I made her laugh. We were talking, and at the end of the intake, you know, because she asked all these questions, I said, she goes, do you want me to take? I go, now we're laughing. I bet my blood pressure will be way different. She took it again. It was really low, like 120 over 70.
So wow.
It's, you know, over and over, I see it demonstrated over and over that it's really, people have to believe this. It's really, really crucial to just calm down and breathe and laugh and do things you enjoy somehow.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I admit that I don't practice yoga. I'm always interested in people who do. It stresses me out. I don't know what, but probably I think a lot of it after talking with you is because my monkey mind kicks in when I do yoga, and it does. I can't get it out. It's like, because I feel it, because I can't do the moves, I'm overly critical of my body and my mind and my judgmental. At least that's for me. And I think.
I think that's, you're very, very much like a lot of people. I've taught some people and they're like, I love this, I'm addicted, and they never come back. And the ones that are very honest have said, it's just too much for me to handle my mind right now. So it takes some courage, but it will happen. And yeah, I don't know where he's going with that.
I want to talk to you a little bit about courage a little later, because you seem to be like a fearless person. Like once you have an idea, you do it. And I think a lot of people are missing that gene, but we could talk about it now, or we could get into, I wanted to talk a little bit about ninja.
My career when I'm DC, our fearless leader, she's really one of my mentors still, went around the table and said, if there's one word you can say about yourself, name it, just say it. And don't think about it. And I just looked and went, bold. So that's a good thing to do to yourself and realize that you are a changing organism. You know, every day you're a little bit different. I'm not the same person I was even 2 months ago, and certainly not 5 or 10 years ago. And you have the ability to change that. So you might want, my word back then might have been different, but I think bold is still sticking, but it's a good gut check. Fearlessness and being brave and bold, it's always good. You're always going to learn, even if you fail. Like the yoga thing, I found it's really hard to get committed people. So after 2.5 years, it's not really a thriving business, which is why I'm doing all kinds of other, wearing all kinds of hats.
Right.
Yeah, because as much as I love it, not everybody can change the rhythm of their life, or are they willing or able to, you know? To add it into their schedule. They get in a rut. We get in a rhythm, I call it, you know, where you get up and you do this and this. You have the same kind of thing every day and this and that. And
I think some of it's cultural as well, if meaning that it's just not in our common vernacular, yoga. I mean, for some people it is. It's a lifestyle. And for others, mm-hmm. like me, it's hard to adopt that lifestyle because it's just not, at least growing up, it hasn't been ingrained into our culture in a way, compared to where if you grew up in India, they don't go to yoga classes, they just do it. It's just something
that's true.
They
do. That's true. I had a call from an Indian guy one time, and he still comes now and then, but he lives too far away now. But he said, would you do a class for me on the beach? I'm like, sure. I met him and it is a whole nother mindset. I've had two Indian students and they're just like, of course you do it. It's sort of like saying you don't brush your teeth, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, like I said, it doesn't really have to be yoga, but just calming down, that meditation, creating focus, mind, body awareness, it does a lot for us Homo sapiens.
Yes. And let's talk a little bit about sleep, because I find that pretty fascinating. Sleep affects just like everything in your life, but sleep, you're not getting enough or you're sleeping too much, it really throws off your productivity, your balance, your center. So Tell us about how you got into that.
We have circadian rhythms, but with electrical lights and the change of the Industrial Revolution, a long time ago, they had, they would call it the first and the second sleep. Middle Ages, they have like documents that say that a lot of babies were born in between the first and the second sleep. And they would wake up because of the sun would set so early, they would literally, you know, not want to burn candles and oil and all that, and gets cold. So people went to sleep a lot earlier, and then they would wake up in the middle and actually have a meal, go visit the neighbors, you know, procreate, you name it.
Right.
And then, or read, and then go back to sleep and still wake up rather early with the sun. Well, then once the light bulb came into being and all of that, we've just, as humans, started thinking, and it got even worse, I think, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, with corporations trying to stretch being a mom, being, you know, in business. The people started getting awards, almost like talking like, I only sleep 3 hours a night, or I only sleep 4 hours a night. Like, that's a big yay, kudo. And it had a negative connotation, sleeping a lot. But really, that has got to go out the window, in my opinion, because the longer you sleep, the more productive you are the next day, the more energized you are, the less little things bother you. I can tell when a friend of mine just hasn't had enough sleep because it's like, or eaten, you know, there's that halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, H-A-L-T. Stay away from all of those because you're bound to do, you can get in car accidents, you can fall asleep on the road. So the sleep thing is so essential, like around 10 o'clock, you know, I always say when you get up in the morning, you have a ritual. You don't just pop out of bed with, you know, scummy teeth and like the stuff in the corner of your eyes. And
that helped, yeah.
You know, there's a ritual. There's something you have to do. Well, like it's the same thing at night. So start turning things down. Don't start watching, you know, horror movies at, and electronics need to all be shut off, and just begin at 10 o'clock to try and cultivate some kind of relaxation. If reading helps you fall asleep, great. But keeping everything really dark, having the temperature just a little lower. There's something about weight. I ask yogis when I put people in Shavasana, the final relaxation, I put a big heavy cushion on their belly. Having that core defended, I think it comes from caveman days where we were, you know, trying to protect ourselves from being eaten. If someone comes at you, what do? You grab your core. So having weight on the body, there are weighted blankets, but quite frankly, I just use this heavy kind of a throw. Really good linens, a little cooler temperature so that you can be covered up.
So going back to that, so you just, you put a blanket over, like a heavy blanket over your belly to help you sleep?
Yes, over kind of my whole body. You can buy a weighted blanket, like at Bed Bath & Beyond, but you also like, this was just like a, one of those soft, wonderful polyester kind of, you know, fuzzy throws, but it's quite heavy. This one's from Frontgate, but my other one, and if you just double it up and put it over yourself, you've got a nice heavy weight. It grounds you and makes you feel better. I also bought on Amazon just for like $30. I thought, what does it hurt? I tried a grounding mat because you plug that in to just to the little round circle of your duplex outlet, and that, and it's a long flat thing, and you think, oh, it's going to be uncomfortable, but it's as thin as a, like a magazine, look thinner than a magazine, and you put it under your fitted sheet. So basically you're laying on that and it's giving you negative electrons because we get them grounding from having bare feet in the earth. And back in the America, the Native Indians used to tell the white man, take your shoes off, you're going to get sick. They were barefoot in their teepees and they let their feet touch the mud and the earth. Because like I said, we are like big batteries. We do have electrical circuits going around through us. And if you don't believe it, I remember this one woman put this numbing cream all over her legs, I guess to do some kind of procedure, like hair removal. And she died because she had too much numbing cream on her and it messed with the electrical impulses. You know, our heart is an electrical and a mechanical pump. So the grounding may help. I don't know. I kind of think it did help me. I make sure that I get plenty of magnesium in my diet. That's like a calming effect. And then I try and sleep. Well, now I'm probably going to be on a regular job because I've picked up a real job now, but I try and sleep till 8 or 9 if I can. On the days that you can sleep, do it. That's all I can say. Sleep in. And you'll wake up more refreshed, but it also has to do with how much liquid did you drink? You know, try and refrain from too much liquid near the end. Caffeine, of course, keep it to the early morning hours. Just a lot of health issues. Some people are eating things that are, excuse me, very toxic for them that may keep them from sleeping. There's not a blanket answer. Like melatonin only helps you fall asleep. It doesn't really help you go stay asleep, and it can have negative impacts. So I like the natural approaches, which are to focus on your breathing, sleeping, try and sleep on your back, focus on the breath going in like an ocean and coming out, or maybe imagining it in the center of your chest and then flowing to the outsides of your limbs. One thing I use if I ever get thinking too much, again, the mind I think is a big culprit, is I just say, choose sleep. Because nothing's going to happen. You know, maybe if you're really thinking a lot, you could get up and jot things down to get them out of your brain and then go back to sleep. But you're not really going to help any of your issues that night in bed, you know, it's other than making yourself exhausted. So trying to value sleep and not brag about not sleeping, not think it's better to not sleep. It's really not. It's really can be detrimental to your health. Now, there are serious situations, you know, like sleep apnea, that where you would want to get checked out and do a sleep study. But what I trained to do was more of a sleep coach. So I would give clients 3 objectives, and we only would work on those 3 that week. And unless if they don't get those accomplished, you know, did you turn off the TV? Did you this? Did you that? Then we just stay on those until we don't move to the next. And little by little, it's really about changing habits like anything else. All in life that we do seems to be either stop doing something or to start doing something else. It can pretty much be put into 2 categories. So you may stop doing something and insert and substitute something else. Hot water, of course, hot tubs, baths, nice thing.
So how is Nidra yoga different than and just yoga in general?
Well, that's a great question. Well, I was trained by Jennifer Reese at Kripalu, and she has trademarked hers Divine Sleep Yoga Nidra. And it's like nid, like a knit pick. So it's Nidra. Nidra in Sanskrit actually means sleep. And then yoga, like I said, is the yoga, the yoke, like that joins the body, mind, and spirit. So it's body, mind, and spirit, complete sleep, and is the deepest meditation that one can attain, relaxation. Depending on the participant, they can go in and out of consciousness, and you shouldn't worry about it. You can do it for 20 minutes, 40 minutes. I like an hour segment, or even longer, of course, but an hour, really, you get the full benefits. So the participant, this is what the great thing is. You don't really have to be too committed. You just show up and lay down.
That's awesome.
A lot of people like that. It's healing for insomnia, of course, PTSD, just a number of health issues that, you know, it just gives you this deep peace, this intuitive knowing, like a relaxation it really helps you know your true self. So what the participant does is literally lay down in corpse pose, which is on your back with, you know, the hands out and the feet out. I still like to put the blanket over, a lavender eye pillow over the eyes. This is my personal, and then the hoodie on the belly so that they're all comfy. And then I begin with, really a calming, just an introduction. And then we go to a body scan. So the body scan helps the body. Again, this mind we have is so active. So I would start at the feet or maybe the head, somewhere logical. You can change it up. But really noticing, for instance, bring your awareness to your toes. Relax all 10 toes. And sometimes I don't even use the word relax because that implies work. So it's like release, let go, melt away, you know, feel it turn into nothing. So it's helping the mind connect with each part of the body, and you acknowledge every part, maybe even the ankle, the shin, the knee. You take it all through the body and, you know, bring your awareness to your hands. The most important things to relax are your hands because they do a lot of bend. If you think about your leg, it goes a couple ways, but the hands are very, they can articulate a lot. So we hold a lot in the palms of our hands. And the second place is the mouth. We really hold a lot of tightness in our jaw. So consciously relaxing the jaw and the whole part of the mouth is key. So you touch on certain points, then pretty much you've gone through the whole body. Now, a lot of people at this point are doing what I call Popeye breathing. They're kind of doing that. Yeah. And then I watch their belly going up and down and watch them breathing. So you can tell that they're starting to go from alpha or a beta brainwave state into a theta and a delta. So they'll be waving between theta and delta brainwave states, which are the really creative part of the unconscious mind. They also are slower, relaxed brainwave states. And so when that starts happening, that's awesome. Then I'm talking, but the leader or the teacher does not stop talking, even though it's in a quiet voice like this. Then you go on a journey, and the journey can be to the beach, it can be to a campfire, a beautiful waterfall, to just really get the person to just completely feel at ease. And then there's a part called the sankalpa, which is that your heart's inner longing. And if you ever realize that sometimes your heart or your mind starts talking to you, you're like, where'd that come from? We're complicated beings. And so I ask the person, what right now is your heart's longing? What is your deepest heart's longing? While they're in this semi, almost a hypnotized state, I've been hypnotized for insomnia when I had a bout of insomnia some years ago. And it feels a lot like that. But
I'm getting relaxed just talking to you.
Very exciting. I'm really excited about it. And so what happens is, like, the first time I did it, I didn't get my sankalpa. And of course you say, and if nothing comes, you know, no worries, relax and enjoy the journey. But sometimes it does. And after I'd gone through this huge change with my husband, kind of forgetting he was married, after about the third time when I was being put out in yoga nidra, I surround myself with those, I heal myself through and with others that I love, or something to that effect. It was really deep. And the yoga was my way out of darkness and my way out of heartbreak. And I felt that I was broken. I knew it wouldn't be for life, but that's kind of deep, but a lot of people are carrying around old baggage and old stories that we all do, you know, and to rewrite those stories, you know, were you always the brother that was never liked? Did your dad never, you know, this or that? Try and rewrite those. Don't live for those. Try and heal yourself by rewriting that story. And that's where the deeper part of yoga nidra comes in. So that's where the healing can take place. Almost like a therapy. You can access your inner wisdom. You get more harmony and clarity and insight into what's going on. So then you repeat that sankalpa if and when you come up with it to yourself silently. And then basically we start taking the person out of the yoga nidra, coming back into life. There is a part where you can describe their inner sanctuary, surrounding yourself with pets or people you love, or what do you see, you know, flowers, whatever colors or beautiful things. It's taking that mind to a really happy, calm, beautiful place, which is where we were intended to be, I believe. We were here to rejoice and to enjoy and to celebrate this life in this form, you know, and when we transition who knows, we transition. But for now, this is what we know. And it's a shame to be too stressed out and to not enjoy that. So the yoga nidra, you wake up and you come out of it. So then I have, you know, ring a bell. And so then people, I'm like, you know, start feeling your fingers, your toes, slowly without any harsh movements, come to a seated position. And there's a grounding mudra, which happens to be, I think this is funny, two peace fingers that you press down into the earth. And I like to do that one because it kind of brings them back. Because a lot of times you can get into your car too soon and be like, whoa, oh, there's a stop. Like at my training, we would go to lunch right after the yoga nidra. Oh, it's good to do on a fairly empty stomach, by the way, too. But, and some people would be like turning the honey, like too much milk, like you turn something on, you'd be like, oh, it's almost like you're on drugs or drunk because you're so relaxed and you come out deep, deep, deep rest. And it may not happen the first time. Some people, it's just like easy peasy. It may not happen the first time, but like anything, you have to give it a few shots and you may then slip into the nice brainwave state.
I was just wondering, what do you think would happen if at a corporate event, they would do that before some kind of negotiation if everyone was forced to do yoga nidra?
Oh, yes. I mean, because they could do it. You can do it 20-minute session and you can do it fully clothed in your regular clothes. So it would be, I would love for that to happen. I mean, that would be just phenomenal. People would have, I think, deeper insights because you're tapping into that unconscious mind. If you ever wake up in the middle of the night, you find out that you have a lot of really creative ideas that your conscious mind really doesn't let in sometimes. You know, that would be a great, great exercise for a company to do. And I'm sure there are companies that do it. There's another yoga nidra called iRest. So it's I-R-E-S-T. A gentleman, right now the name is, I'm forgetting, Richard something, but in Manhattan, they'll go to these studios and sort of just midday and get their hour rest and then come back out. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, it really sounds amazing. So are you going to keep up with it? I know you're going back to work full time after being an entrepreneur, someone wearing many hats. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm kind of excited because it's been 9 years since my husband at the time told me to retire because he wanted us to travel together. So, you know, I learned to golf. I started artistically painting. I did interior design for myself and my friends, that kind of thing. Then the yoga, then the sleep consulting.
Right.
And then the home organizing, kind of home advisor and home designing. And all told, I was still not making a lot, especially the benefits too. You have to look at that part of it. So I thought, well, why not? I'm a person of possibility. I'll reach out and get my resume out there. And so now I'm starting a full-time job next week, in fact, doing interior design, which I love, and benefits. So I'll still do the other things just because I just love them. I think when you're passionate about something, it's not a lot of work. It's really just a lot of fun. And I'm just for myself, I really have never been like too sedentary. But once you retire, you realize you do have a lot of hours in the day and you have to really stare at yourself and go, that's just fine. Calm, you know, and deal with it. But having that structure is kind of good too. So I'm going to see how this phase goes. Nothing's forever. And and still to pursue my side businesses.
Yeah. And I think there, you know, there's a lot of women out there who are in that situation where just because you're going back to work full time, it doesn't mean that your business failed or you have to let it go. It could be just become deprioritized, become your side hustle.
Right. Well, like this business I'm in, they have a gym. So I'm looking already at the possibility of teaching the people. Well, there are 200 people in this company, but teaching them yoga after work, like, okay, 5:30 we'll start or 5:15 in this room. So because it's just such a great practice. When I say teach, I'm just really leading it and bringing this incredible practice to other people. And I just believe it enhances lives.
So. I think it's what you bring to the world, Renee. So I think that's, it's great that you pursue it and it doesn't stay in your head. Instead, you know, you go out there and do it and see what happens, which I think is fantastic.
Keeps me sane. I mean, people think, oh, yoga teacher, they must be so. No, we do it because we need it too.
Right.
So
yeah, I
very exciting. Very exciting.
So what, when you think about if people listen, you know, the women or people, hopefully men will listen to this too. What do you wish you knew when you first got started in any of the businesses that you started?
Just how much work it is, in terms of networking, and you just can't know enough people. But also getting rid of the limiting thoughts like, well, I only have 30 friends. And once they're tapped mm-hmm. out, you've got to remember that each person that you know has 30 friends. And so if you're really passionate about it, and you love what you're doing, it will show through, and then it may spread to, you know, exponentially. And so not to not limit yourself to, oh, this isn't going anywhere. The second thing is stick with it. Like, just keep plugging, because a lot of people, I think, want immediate results and they quit mm-hmm. before they've put that extra, you know, that proverbial, just keep pushing that rock uphill. You're going to get to the top eventually if you want it bad enough. And then thirdly, you will have to sacrifice some things. You know, I had a lot of budget cuts and you will, but you know, you can't have everything, as they say, right? So those would probably be the three things that that I've learned. Just that word of mouth marketing, no matter what it is you're doing, is really key. And it's just a lot of work to do. Like, I don't really like posting a lot on social media. So I'm sure if I did a little more of that, you know, I would have had a little more traction. And just trying everything, you know, thinking outside of the box with paper flyers that you put up at various businesses. And luckily, I think Sussex County, Delaware, people are pretty friendly about that. The big city, causes you to get a little, oh, they're never going to put my flyers somewhere. You know, they've got 200,000 people asking them. So, but here, you know, it's really still a high touch community, I think.
And friendly, for sure.
Mm-hmm. People are,
and that's
really
why I'm down here from New York City.
yeah, big difference, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, what else would you like other you know, women to know, whether they're thinking about getting into yoga or just in general? What are some of your parting thoughts of wisdom?
Oh, sure. Some person said the way we do anything is the way we do everything. And I love that thought. Keep that in mind. Follow through, you know, try and finish things. If you're traditionally a quitter or a procrastinator, find a way to work around that. Figure out how to work around that habit. Also, gosh, there was one that was really key that I just slipped my mind, but to just continually be expanding your network of people, and knowing that it's not going to happen overnight, but if you really do love what you're doing, just stick with it and be positive. Do not judge yourself. Don't be critical, because once you're critical of yourself, then you're critical of others. And, you know, if you don't love yourself enough and believe in yourself enough, you can't really love others. So got to have enough to spread around.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, someone can't love you until you love yourself. And I think that spreads to everything that you do.
Yeah.
Why that monkey brain is such a pain in the butt sometimes.
Yeah. And I really use a calendar. I know it sounds old fashioned, but I put every workout I do in my calendar. I put every appointment, everything's in there. And if I put it in my calendar, like, boom, I'm doing this. I try and really live, like, I make an appointment with myself. So be accountable to yourself.
It's great.
Works for me.
Well, I wish you the best of luck in your new adventure.
Yay. I can't wait. Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. And hope you don't give up on your yoga as well. I know it's part of your life and I'm sure you'll continue.
And I really want to do more of that yoga nidra. Just talking to you and hearing your enthusiasm got me.
If I just have to lay there, I'm in. Getting my body to move, and you know, I feel like I have to run and exercise and do these all these other things too. But you know, you have to stop and rest and get in touch with yourself too. And the way you describe it, it sounds like a pretty fantastic way of doing that.
It's really yummy. So yeah, I really need to promote that, like on the weekends, like probably you know, just an informational seminar workshop. Three-hour workshop or something where people are able to learn these techniques because they're just awesome.
And where can people reach you? I know you still Find Your Zen.
Yes. So it's findyourzenstudio.com is my yoga site. And then that's a website. And then Facebook is Find Your Zen Home for home organizing. Because I also I think that you can live more peacefully when you're don't have a lot of clutter in your home.
Yes.
I do the merge and purge thing. So you purge items first and then you merge like items together. So I call it the purge and merge.
That's amazing. That's something that does not come naturally for myself, unfortunately. But it's all there. So findyourzenstudio.com.
Correct.
And Find Your Zen Home is Facebook.
Right. That was sort of a side business.
Sure. Now, I know you're doing other stuff too with Arbonne.
Arbonne. This woman's nuts. I just became an Arbonne. But again, there's no pressure. There's no downside. So if someone wants the product, I'm here to talk about it and, you know, create that. I almost forgot about that one.
And it's good. It's all good. I think this is the world we live in now is people do have these gigs. It's become a gig economy. And
yeah, it really has. Like my son, he can live anywhere because his job is virtual. And a long time ago, we just, you know, never would have thought of that. I was born in the 50s. So, you know, it's just a whole new world out there, but you can always say no to a job if you get overloaded. So, you know, put all the sticks in the fire. That would be my advice. Don't be negative. And I know a great one. I want to end with this. I also heard, what do you do when you don't have any requirement, you know, and nothing? What do you do when no one's looking? Do you sit around and putter with, look at those actions. That's probably what your job should be. I mean, when no one's looking, I organize my drawers or I paint or I start fixing up my home or I go exercise or I do yoga. So all I did was say, wow, that's what I like to do. Why don't I just decide to get paid for it? So that would be a really great thing. Just observe yourself and see what is it that you naturally gravitate to. Because then you're not fighting, again, you're not going upstream. You know, you're working with your natural inclinations anyway.
Right. And that's why I'm a writer. I guess I'm always writing in some form or fashion or reading. So
there you go. So you got to go with that, right?
Yeah, you do. And well, don't
you're
give
a good
up.
Interviewer too. Maybe that's your next calling.
Well, I'm a professional moderator.
There you go. Perfect.
So I did that forever. So this is kind of like moderating through a podcast. And I loved it. I love talking to people like this, just one-on-one. You find out so many fascinating things. And, you know, I'm hoping that the people who listen to this found it just as interesting.
Great. I enjoyed it. It was fabulous. I think it's a niche of yours. Go for it.
I'm like you. I'm trying different things, trying new content, and it's all good. You have to put yourself out there, even though it's kind of scary.
That's the key word. Forget about the fear. Fear stands for false evidence appearing real. F-E-A-R.
False evidence
appearing real. Forget the fear. Go with love, love, love. All good. Gratefulness. And every day, fight that fear demon. Just every day.
Fear. False evidence.
Appearing real.
Appearing real.
Isn't that awesome?
That is awesome. I tell you, fear, it's scary being your business owner and not, you know, not having that paycheck.
Yeah, worrying about the money thing is not fun.
Mm-hmm. So, or if, you know, putting yourself out there and fear of rejection, there's fear of everything, but false evidence appearing real. I'll have to remember that myself.
Right. Get rid of it. And chaos is still good. Action, any kind of action creates results. So even if you feel like you're in chaos, that's better than like, you know, flatline, right?
It's true. I get so much done when, you know, in chaos, it's pretty incredible.
It's funny about the body. When we're really, really busy, we somehow find that time. We dig deep and you know, those nights when you have to stay up long past and you still feel energized. Mm-hmm. If you're doing something, again, it brings you joy.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Renee. Again, it's findyourzenstudio.com. You can find Renee there on Facebook, Find Your Zen Home. So I certainly appreciate your talk. And I look forward to talking to you again, Renee.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. It was really fun to share my passions. Take good care.
You too, Renee.
All right. Bye.
It's Joanne French, your host of Women Interviews. These shows end way too soon for me. I hope you got something out of this. I know I did. Every episode, I learned so much from these wonderful ladies, and I really hope you do too. Tune in next time by subscribing to our podcast or find us on Facebook at Women Interviews. Send me a note if you'd like to be a guest. I'd love to hear from you. And special thanks again to our sponsor, interviews.com. To your success, ladies. Enjoy the rest of your day.